Hello, hello. Welcome back to another episode of the Summer Movies Podcast. My name is Eric Davis. I am the managing editor over at movies.com. And if you haven't listened to this podcast, yes, this is a Summer Movies Podcast. It's all about summer movies, past, present, and future. Today, our big Memorial Day weekend, holiday weekend podcast, I have torn him from his barbecuing and his sitting in the rocking chairs in North Carolina. I would like to welcome Sean O'Connell to the podcast. He's the movie's content director over at cinemablend.com. Hello, Sean. Thank you for taking some time on this holiday weekend to talk about summer movies.
Here's where I get to educate you, Eric, because Memorial Day weekend in Charlotte, North Carolina is the Coca-Cola 600 NASCAR race.
Oh.
An evening race, so I can do this during the day and it won't interfere with my NASCAR going on later on tonight.
So that's like a big thing. That's what everybody in North Carolina and Charlotte.
It is the hugest thing. It's all week. We have Speed Street going on in Uptown Charlotte, which takes over the streets of the city, and they have a ton of concerts. And actually, the All-Star race was last weekend, and then it leads into the Coca-Cola 600 on Sunday. So it's a full 10 days of NASCAR racing down here.
It sounds exhilarating.
It smells awesome.
Yes, and I am recording this on the road. I road trip down to Maryland for the weekend, and we are smoking some pork and smoking some ribs and having some barbecue and enjoying the beautiful weather and enjoying our families. And so, I from us to you, we have a great holiday weekend. And if you are connected to a soldier, a fallen soldier who has given their life for this country, then they are a hero. And that's sort of what that's why we celebrate Memorial Day weekend. But Memorial Day weekend is also a huge weekend for movies, Sean. I think if you have a list of the top three weekends for movies every year, I think you have to say Memorial Day weekend and July 4th weekend, right?
Yeah, definitely.
And then the first weekend of May, you think?
No, Thanksgiving Day weekend is still pretty huge.
Thanksgiving.
Yeah. I mean, but like somebody actually asked me, I was doing a spot on NBC on Friday, and they were like, well, this is the kickoff to the summer, isn't it? And I'm like, that's funny. Like it used to be, but everything just keeps getting moved up and up and up. And so obviously we've had Godzilla and Spider-Man, and some would even say it sort of started with Captain America. But Memorial Day used to signify for a lot of people because schools were finally out or getting close to being out. And this used to be when the summer movie season would kick off. And it just – that's not the case anymore.
No. I think ever since I would say the Spider-Man movies and Iron Man – I think Iron Man sort of solidified that first weekend of May as being the new official kickoff for the summer. And when you have movies like The Amazing Spider-Man 2 and Godzilla that come before this weekend, then summer is going on. The summer movie season is in full steam. I think you even backtrack to Captain America: The Winter Soldier and put that into the conversation too. If it was up to Marvel, the first weekend of April may become the new opener for summer, but we'll see.
Yeah, they're going to put something in March, Marvel, and then they'll be like, oh, it's summer now. Let's go.
But anyway, we're going to talk about X-Men Days of Future Past because that is the big weekend the big movie we're going to discuss because I think that is, Blended also came out, Adam Sandler and Drew Barrymore. But in terms of big Memorial Day weekend, quote-unquote summer starters, whatever you want to call it, X-Men Days of Future Past is the big movie that came out this weekend. We're also going to talk about other movies, our favorite movies that have come and premiered over the summer, over Memorial Day weekend in the past. And some of these movies, you're going to laugh that you probably had no idea they premiered over this weekend. But let's start off with big news related to summer movies, Ant-Man. This is a movie that was supposed to open up in November of 2016, but they moved it back to July. So we can talk about it on this podcast, technically, because it is a summer movie. And Ant-Man is the movie that's coming out after The Avengers Age of Ultron. This is going to start, I guess, their phase three, correct?
Yes.
And it was going to be directed by Edgar Wright. It was going to star Paul Rudd and Michael Douglas. And Edgar Wright, I mean, production. I talked to Kevin Feige during Captain America: The Winter Soldier junket. He said they were 10 weeks out from start of production on Ant-Man. That's going back late March. So, I mean, they literally have to be like 2 weeks away, if not from start of production on Ant-Man. And Edgar Wright has left the project. Word is that he left the project due to a recent script rewrite that was not aligning with his vision, and he decided to walk. That's what I'm hearing.
Yeah, and what surprises me most about it, more than anything, not even the how close they were to the start of production, but just how long Edgar Wright has been involved with this project. It dates all the way back to 2006. Someone shared a link. I might even have been you, like to a Marvel site that showed that Ant-Man's Edgar Wright's Ant-Man, not just Ant-Man, but like with Edgar Wright attached to it, was first announced like with the initial Iron Man and with the initial Captain America.
Yeah.
Like, they've been planning this for, and dude, he was at Comic-Con with test footage. He was constantly talking about the script that he had in place. And from what I'm reading, it's just that he kept wanting to hold on to that old script. And the Marvel Cinematic Universe obviously has changed so much. And he needed to sort of reevaluate what he was attempting to do and didn't like the revisions that came back. And maybe that's true. Maybe it isn't true. I'm not sure. But the general consensus seems to be for most people, like, they weren't over the moon about Ant-Man as a character or as the potential of a feature. But because Edgar Wright was attached to it, people were willing to go along with it. And now if you plug in whoever it's going to be, I wonder if fans are going to be equally excited about it.
Yeah, it's hard because Edgar Wright has such a distinct vision. Yeah. When you watch an Edgar Wright movie, this is a guy who did Shaun of the Dead. He most recently did The World's End. He did Scott Pilgrim vs. the World, which I really love. He's a guy that you watch one of his movies, you could tell it's an Edgar Wright movie. I think that's why a lot of people were excited that he was doing a Marvel movie, because it was that first – that was that opportunity to see a movie that looked – you know, that maybe looked different than other Marvel movies just because they had such a director with such a strong vision behind it. Not that these other directors that have done Marvel movies don't have distinct visions, but Edgar Wright, you know what his movies look like. And I was really looking forward to seeing what an Edgar Wright Marvel movie looked like. I think a lot of people were too. So this is a big bit of bummer news. And I don't know who you replace him with. You know, I mean, I don't even know where you start to pick up the pieces from this, because the cast is still in place, apparently. They don't have room in their contracts to walk, assuming. And I'm getting some of this information from Latino Review. I'm going to mention them. They claim that they have the exclusive. They know exactly what happened. They are saying that it was a rewrite, that they had to fit in some other characters. And like you're saying, the Marvel Cinematic Universe is widened, and there's certain things that need to go into this movie, I imagine, to set up other movies. And Edgar Wright and Joe Cornish, who wrote the script, tried to fit some of that stuff in. I guess it wasn't working for high up on the Marvel chain, and Edgar Wright, I guess, did not like the script that came back with some rewrites, and decided to walk away. So where do you even start here, Sean? What do you do? Do you try to go find another director that has a distinct vision that sort of kind of eases the pain of Edgar Wright leaving? Do you think that something like this, how much do you think this affects the project? Like, I mean, yeah, the fanboys know Edgar Wright, but, you know, I imagine a good amount of people that just enjoy Marvel movies have no idea really that this is going on. So what do you do?
It feels like Marvel has been looking more and more to plug in up-and-comers. The Russo brothers take over Captain America. They're largely television directors who are given a first shot at a feature. They roll the dice on Shane Black, who's a screenwriter, you know, for the most part, to take over Iron Man 3. I mean, they have Whedon, obviously. But this gives them a chance to then, you know, scour the ranks of the B and C lists, I think, and plug in somebody who's going to do what Marvel wants them to do. I just get the impression that Edgar was too much of a, not loose cannon, but free spirit almost, and wanted to do it his way. And there is now the Marvel way. And I was talking to Eric Eisenberg, who's on staff with us here, and he said it's really hard for a filmmaker with a strong voice to say to Marvel, your way is not working, because clearly it is. But I think that they're losing out on an opportunity to bring some real flavor to these sequels, because I liked Captain America 2, but it had a bit of the sameness that's coming from the Marvel Cinematic Universe. And I think when Joss is able to do what he's doing with Avengers 2, you're going to point at it and be like, now there's a filmmaker who has a cinematic vocabulary, and he's putting it to use in the Marvel world. And as much as I thought the Russos did a good job, there wasn't anything that really stood out where you were like, holy cow, like that's an awesome directorial choice. I thought it just was workmanlike, and I think they're going to find somebody who is workmanlike for Ant-Man. And that worries me for something like Doctor Strange or any of these future projects that they're talking about doing, because I think you have to start getting a little bit weird. And we really thought Edgar was going to be able to take Marvel to some weird places, and now I don't think it's going to happen.
Yeah, I agree. I think when you get into your phase three, you know, you should start taking some chances. I mean, Guardians of the Galaxy is a huge chance. James Gunn is a filmmaker who has a really large vision. I think that's who you go for. You go for another James Gunn-type filmmaker, somebody who's known to have a little bit of an edge, who's got a fun vision, but someone who can kind of come into your universe and play ball. I guess that's what you go for. It's funny, if Gareth Edwards didn't land a Star Wars movie 1 week after Godzilla opened, I bet you a lot of people would say, go get Gareth Edwards to do it. But Gareth Edwards is busy now for a long time.
Credit to Marvel for picking James Gunn. I forgot about that, and that's a bold choice.
It is.
That really is. I think it's going to pay off for Guardians in a big way.
It is, and I hope you know what. As much as I wanted to see an Edgar Wright Marvel movie, I guess this frees Edgar to do something else. And as long as he keeps making movies, we're okay. Let's quickly touch on another big story from this week that we have not covered yet: is the Batman v Superman Dawn of Justice. New title for Batman vs Superman opens up on May 6, 2016. As of now, opposite another Marvel Studios movie in Captain America 3. Sean, a lot of controversy over this title. People were going all kinds of crazy over it. I don't think it's that big of a deal. I think you have a movie that has Batman and Superman. It's still Batman and Superman are in the title. I'm going to see it no matter what. Is this kind of movie, you know, also reminds me of Captain America, the First Avenger. Obviously, it's a movie that's going to set up the Justice League movie. That's why you have Dawn of Justice in the title. Is this a title that, I mean, and some people go out there and say this title suggests that the movie is going to be awful. I mean, are you one of those people, or are you somebody like me that's just like, it's just a title, relax?
It's just a title. I hate that the word Dawn has become like this hot buzz marketing. It feels like a marketing team made them do that. But, I mean, it doesn't affect how I feel about the movie. The movie's still going to be awesome or disaster because of what Zack Snyder's doing. It doesn't really matter. I'm glad we have a title. I'm glad they finally put that to rest. I think it does sort of tip its hand of just how much this movie is going to be used to set up the Justice League. Obviously, if you're calling it Dawn of Justice. But as long as it still has the words Batman and Superman in it, I'm 100% on board.
Yeah, I imagine that's what people said. They said, look, this is what we have to do. We have to keep Batman versus Superman in some capacity, because that's what everybody's been calling it for a year now. But right. Then we also want to kind of hint that it's going to set up a Justice League movie. And you know what? That's what movies are doing these days. You know, right. Marvel has changed the game when it comes to franchises, not just superhero franchises, but just franchises in general. They all want to have these connected universes. They all want you to know that they have connected universes. So not only is it enough to have a Batman versus Superman, but they want you to also know that Justice League is coming within the title of the movie before Justice League even shoots. I mean, that's just where we're at these days.
You were in Hall H when they revealed the Age of Ultron title, and mm-hmm. people were losing their minds just for the revelation of a title. I think if they had saved the reveal of the title for Comic-Con in July, and if they revealed Dawn of Justice, I think people would have been losing their minds.
I agree.
Just a press release that went out, everyone was like, it's terrible. It's going to be an awful movie.
I agree. I think titles, when they wait long to release a title after a movie's announced, there's all of this time and buildup of people who are, you know, of people to get against it. But when you do that shock, I completely agree. When you just shock an audience and come prepared and say, here's our movie, here's our title, here's who's in it, here we go. I think that when it comes to these big movies, I kind of think that's the best way to go, because you just shock everyone with all this information, and they don't have time. They don't have an entire year to sit and build up, this kind of premeditated hate for whatever title you're going to release. I mean, they could have said anything. They, you know, I think with this movie, with the title, and people would have probably hated it.
It's going to be okay, everyone. It's going to be fine. It's still Batman, Superman. Doesn't really matter. Like, a year from now, we're not really going to care what it's called. We're just going to be wondering when the trailer's going to drop.
Exactly. And I hope that we do see some footage at Comic-Con this year. That would be really cool. X-Men Days of Future Past was the movie that came out this weekend. You know, I when I walked out, you know, I always tweet when I walk out, and I always look back at those tweets like a week later, and I say, do I still feel this way? And I walked out of X-Men Days of Future Past. I said it was my favorite X-Men movie to date. excuse me, Sean, I still feel that way. I really like it. I just really, really liked this movie. I liked how it sort of put aside a lot of the X-Men relationship-y stuff that we get. There's no huge love triangles that are in your face, so to speak. There's no kind of Romeo and Juliet-esque X-Men relationship that's taking time away from the action. This is a straight-up, quote-unquote, Mission Impossible-like X-Men movie, where it celebrates the franchise, I think, in some really fun ways. And if you're somebody who's been following these X-Men movies since 2000, I don't know how this isn't your favorite X-Men. I think it just kind of captures all sorts of the best parts of what this franchise has done over the years, and throws it back at you and has a fun time doing a lot of humor. My favorite X-Men. What do you think?
Oh, I'm 100% on board. And I'm blown away by the fact that this movie couldn't exist unless they laid the groundwork with an initial trilogy and had some existing X-Men to tap into, and then done First Class. And I don't know if when they, you know, hired Matthew Vaughn to do First Class, if the goal was always going to be let's do Days of Future Past. But if First Class tanked and if people didn't buy into it, then they wouldn't be doing this. But it's here and it exists because they laid enough groundwork at Fox. And, you know, we're able to bring everybody else back, which is also really impressive. The Patrick Stewart, Ian McKellen, Halle Berry, you know, that's a huge cast just with those guys. But then you get to the First Class universe, and I love what McAvoy is doing as young Professor Xavier. Obviously, Magneto is like Fassbender is unbelievable as Magneto. It's really funny. Like, there's so many things that I love about Days of Future Past. And it's like I think it's Jackman's best performance as Wolverine. I think Quicksilver is a scene stealer, obviously. That you don't even get to Jennifer Lawrence, who's a freaking Oscar winner and like Hollywood's it girl, and she's like 18th on the list of things that I love about this movie.
Yeah, so. I feel like she has the least amount to do in this film. And I could see people who are really into First Class. And there are some people that came out of this and they're like, I really like Days of Future Past, but X-Men First Class still tops it. And I think because that film had a lot of emotional weight to it, and it was a really successful sort of prequel kind of origin story for a lot of these characters that we had grown to know over the course of the Bryan Singer's two films and then Ratner's movie. So, I could see people kind of walking out of this one feeling a little let down just because the emotional weight and depth of First Class is not in this movie, because that movie set all it up, and now this movie can let those characters loose and have fun with them, which it did, and which I really enjoyed. And like you mentioned, this is Hugh Jackman's best performance as Wolverine. You know what? This is also Wolverine's the comic relief in this movie. And that is something that I enjoyed so much out of it. You know, Quicksilver also when he's in it. But, you know, like that scene on the airplane, you know, I don't think we've spoiled this movie too much before, but I will say that we do spoil the hell out of movies on this podcast. So if you haven't seen X-Men Days of Future Past, you don't want anything spoiled, stop now.
Right.
But the scene on the airplane when McAvoy and Fassbender are going at each other, you know, and having a vintage Xavier versus a Magneto moment, you know, and then you have Wolverine kind of sitting there dealing with it, and then at the end, it's I think my favorite line of the whole movie is they kind of look, the plane straightens out, they look at Jackman, and he's like, "You gonna pick all that shit up?" It's my favorite line of the movie. It was just such a great delivery, and it just goes to show you how they use Jackman in this movie. Yeah, they use him as Wolverine, and he's bad to the bone, and I love that scene where he's running at Magneto, and he's knocking pieces of a baseball stadium away with his claw, and Magneto gets him, and he defeats Wolverine. You know, so it was just a really – really cool, you know. Just it was really fun to watch Jackman play with those actors from the new sort of, I guess, X-Men franchise. You know, we didn't get so as much with the future cast, but we got enough to say sort of to feel good about it. You know what I'm saying? I think their part in this movie was more to celebrate sort of the franchise than it was to be integral. Characters, I guess, to say. You know what I'm saying?
I totally agree. And the thing that I love about it is by resetting, and again, we're into spoilers, by resetting the timeline and sort of reestablishing that everything is going to sort of build off of the First Class universe from this point on. It sets the stage for bringing back some characters that we lost along the way, and putting them in X-Men Apocalypse. And, you know, that's Cyclops and it's Nightcrawler and it's characters I really like about that. I went back and tried to watch Ratner's movie, The Last Stand, and was just reminded about how much Bryan Singer knows the characters and how their powers work.
Which is a big part of this movie, because I think it's one of the best uses of this movie are the X-Men scenes where they're using their powers.
Even someone as superficial and new as Blink, you know, who's just teleporting people around, like one of the baddest ass scenes is she teleports Colossus from like a high point and he comes barreling down and punches a sentinel, and I was like, I can stop now. That was fantastic. Like, yeah. That was one of the best X-Men things I've seen on screen, and it's like at the very beginning of the movie. So kudos to Singer for just totally – I've been badgering Fox to just like put him on the phone. I just want to get him on the phone. I know he won't talk to anybody, but I just want to talk to him about this movie. He did such a good job with it, and he's under radio silence for obvious reasons, but I would love for Bryan Singer to just talk about like what these characters mean to him and how he understands to film their powers and to put them into a movie that just never stops moving like the way this one does.
I agree. You know, typical Marvel though has villain problems. You know, if we're going to talk about some of the things that could have been better in this movie, I think Trask, Peter Dinklage, is underused. I think his best line in the movie is when he walks past the secretary and he's like, "Is that a new scarf? I like it." And technically, he's not even as his character. He's supposed to, it's Mystique as him. I think he's underused. I don't think he's used as much as he doesn't feel like the kind of villain that you want him to feel like. But I think that speaks to just these Marvel movies in general. I really feel like they all have villain problems, with the exception of Loki, who they've developed over, what, one, two, three films now?
And they haven't let him go. He's still alive at the end of Thor the Dark World.
Yeah, so. And I think that's also another issue with these Marvel movies, too, is that we don't really – you know, in this one, we don't really lose anybody. Everybody – they have awesome deaths. I mean, they have some really – fantastic X-Men death scenes that don't mean anything at the end of the movie because everybody's okay. You know, and I think there's a certain element of people wanting. That's why I still give Mark Webb credit, and I really hope he doesn't bring back Emma Stone in part three. Because I give him credit for actually being ballsy enough to kill a character in a movie and say, "That's it, we're done."
Hey, let me ask you a question. Do you need more Hugh Jackman as Wolverine, or can this be it?
You know, well, they're making another solo Wolverine movie. You know, I like watching him. I like watching him as Wolverine. I liked the way they used him in this movie.
Right.
Like I said, I loved how he was the comic relief. Was so used to just such a hardcore. And it's not to say that there isn't humor in his other movies, because there is. But I think there's a lot more humor in this movie than previous X-Men movies.
Yeah.
And Wolverine is a huge part of that. I mean, they use him as the comic relief in this film. And that's – I really liked watching him. It felt fresh to me in that respect.
Yeah.
And I did not feel like I was just getting a retread of a character that and he wasn't giving me anything new. He wasn't surprising me with anything, because he was. I enjoyed watching him in this one. He was the most versatile that he's been in all of these movies. Do I need to see another Wolverine solo movie? I don't know.
Yeah, I kind of agree.
I would watch a Quicksilver solo movie, I'll tell you that much.
Yeah. Well, no, you know what? I don't know about that either. Like, I heard some people saying that too, like, get him a solo movie. All of these X-Men guys seem to be really good in their moments, and maybe the strength of it is just that when you have an ensemble, someone doesn't have to carry the entire load. Like, they're talking about a Mystique movie. I really don't want that, you know? Like, I don't know who's strong enough as an X-Men to carry their own film. They all seem like they're great as a team, and I don't really know if I want any of them to be individual.
Yeah, but do they ever really have their own films, though? I mean, even the solo movies still have other mutants in it.
Yeah.
You know, I do feel like Fox does want to spin off, and they need to figure out where do we go beyond Wolverine, because they do need to have – they do want to spin this off in some capacity, and I don't know where you go. I'm not sure how it's done, but I could see a Mystique movie. You know, I could see them changing up and having like a cool like heist thriller of some kind, because Mystique has those kinds of powers that you could really play around with. But it's about surrounding these characters with other characters that are new and exciting and fresh and work, and maybe other characters that can then move back into the ensemble movies. Right. But yeah, I mean, when you have Jennifer Lawrence, who was blown up since the first time she played Mystique, you know, I don't blame them for wanting to give them her own movie. But you know what? I'll be honest with you. She's got to do more than she did in Days of Future Past, because out of all of those characters, she was kind of, I don't know, kind of phoning it in a little bit, in my opinion. Sean, we are dipping into the end of our podcast, and I want to talk about Memorial Day weekends in general, the summer movies that have come out over Memorial Day weekend. We're going to mention our favorites, but before we do, I want to talk about some movies that have come out Memorial Day weekend, because now these days, if you grow up these days, you just know Memorial Day weekend is this giant movie weekend. You know big movies are going to come out. With other movies that have come out over the years, though, Ernest Goes to Camp.
Yes. Raising Helen.
Raising Helen.
Come on. That's your Memorial Day weekend right there, baby.
Brewster's Millions, a personal favorite of mine.
Encino Man is a Memorial Day weekend.
Encino Man was a Memorial Day weekend. Drop Dead Fred.
Oh, Hudson Hawk. Hudson Hawk is a Memorial
Hudson
Day.
Hudson Hawk is a Memorial Day. Madonna Truth or Dare is a Memorial Day weekend movie.
What else?
Bullworth. We're looking at Poltergeist 2, The Other Side. I don't blame them for putting that out on Memorial Day weekend.
Keanu Reeves thought he had a huge hit in Johnny Mnemonic.
Johnny Mnemonic.
Back in 1995. And Super Mario Brothers was a Memorial Day weekend.
I don't blame him for that one. Flintstones, you know. I'm surprised. Are you surprised there isn't – well, I guess Blended is the big family movie that's coming out this weekend. And I did some radio spots talking about Blended. And, of course, everybody always approaches it like, oh, Adam Sandler stinks, right? This movie's going to stink, right? And you know what? I give Sandler credit. With it, we're in an age now where there's all these R-rated comedies all over the place. No one is really making family comedies.
Right.
You know, it's either R-rated comedies or it's animated movies. But there's no real live-action family comedies that, like, parents can go with, like, their preteens or maybe even a little bit younger and just enjoy a movie. And that's kind of Sandler. That's this niche that he's filling. And I guess that's what the niche that Blended fills.
Listen, there are 15 fresh reviews on Rotten Tomatoes, and mine is one of them. I saw it. I did not hate it in the least bit. I think they have legit chemistry together. You're exactly right. I think it's PG. Like, she dials back Sandler's kind of idiocy. And because they're both playing parents and there's a lot of kid humor in it, it's way more accessible than any of these grown-ups movies, which are, you know, kind of raunchy and surprisingly. Like, I hear families tell me, like, who have kids my kid's age, and they're like, yeah, we let them watch grown-ups or grown-ups too. And I'm like, you let them watch that? Like, what? What's the matter with you guys? Can't you preview that stuff beforehand? That is not a kid movie. But like Blended sort of could be a kid movie. It's just that most people see Sandler and they're like, eh, I'll wait.
Is it as good as Tales from the Hood, which came out on May 26, 1995?
Clearly not. I mean, nothing's as good as Tales from the Hood.
But let's talk about some of our favorite movies though that have premiered on Memorial Day weekend. I'm going to pick Indiana Jones and the Last Crusade. On the all-time Memorial Day box office list, it is currently sitting at number 23. It opened with $37 million on May 24th, 1989. You know what I love about this movie is that at the time, it was a great capper for a trilogy. It's one of my favorite Indiana Jones movies. I love the relationship between Indiana Jones and his father, played by Sean Connery. I feel like this is Sean Connery's last great role. In this movie. I wish we would have gotten multiple Indiana Jones movies with the two of them because he was, I think, one of the best additions to the franchise. Of course, Indiana Jones and the Kingdom of the Crystal Skull also premiered over the Memorial Day weekend. It currently sits at number 2 on the box office. Made a lot more money than Indiana Jones and the Last Crusade. Of course, this is almost 20 years later. But you know what? It's just one of those movies that truly you feel like if this is a summer opener, because back then I feel like this Memorial Day weekend, this is what it was for in 1989. this weekend was, I guess, the opening of the summer movie season. This is the movie that would have felt awesome to go see. And I saw it on the big screen. I loved it. I still love this movie to this day. I feel like they should have just ended the franchise here. And as they rode off into the sunset on those horses.
Yeah.
And it's just my favorite all-time Memorial Day weekend. I feel like it is the perfect Memorial Day weekend movie to go see. And so that's my favorite. What's yours?
Before I get to mine, I want to point out how many part threes, including Last Crusade that you mentioned. Like, the Memorial Day weekend apparently is for third parts of franchises, because the number one highest grossing one is Pirates of the Caribbean at World's End. Mm-hmm. You have X-Men Last Stand. Mm-hmm. You have Men in Black 3.
Hangover.
Hangover 3. You have Last Crusade, like you mentioned. Beverly Hills Cop 3. Back to the Future 3. Alien 3.
Rambo 3. Rocky 3.
Rocky 3. All these part 3s. Why is that? When we got to that point, how come the studio was just like, we got to put on Memorial Day?
Yeah, maybe because this is the last one that they're going to have in the franchise. You know, these days I feel like they go beyond 3. There's a new mentality when it comes to franchises. But back then, I felt like it was your three, your 1, 2, 3. And if this is the one we're going to end our franchise on, then let's put it on one of the biggest weekends of the year. And Memorial Day weekend is that weekend, I think. I think if you're a studio executive, Sean, and you have a really big movie, maybe it's a movie that's ending your franchise, and you have your pick of the weekends, which weekend do you open it up with?
If I could pick any weekend, I'd still pick the first weekend in May.
Really? Well, that's because that nowadays.
Yeah.
I feel like when a lot of these part threes that we mentioned, Memorial Day weekend was the summer kickoff weekend back then.
Sure.
You know, it's changed, yes, now to the opening of May. I don't know. I feel like that first weekend in May still belongs to the superhero movie. Like, I don't know if you could open up The Hangover Part 3 on the first weekend of May and make as much money as you would on Memorial Day weekend.
Right. Well, I guess July 4th is still probably the big one, to the point where, like, July 4th now starts at the end of June. Like, you're going to get Transformers, you know, June 27th or something, and that's technically the July 4th holiday. My pick is a Part 3. It's Return of the Jedi. And it's so funny that they had to relegate Episode 7 to a December release, but you know that Disney and Star Wars wants to get back into May. Like, they're angling for all these solo films to shift the schedule back to May. They would love to dominate that frame once again, because it just feels like that is the big time, the big slot to come. And Return of the Jedi, they didn't get much bigger than that. I think that people really they love Star Wars, obviously. It was huge. And then Empire, like, turned a corner, and they were like, holy cow, this can actually get better. So by the time the Jedi rolled around – now, maybe it didn't really live up to it, like the Ewoks and, you know, all that kind of stuff. It's still a good movie, and it's better than the prequels, of course. But I think when Return of the Jedi came around, the enthusiasm and the excitement was palpable. I can remember being that age and being so fired up to go to the theater and to see it opening weekend. And I don't know if people still have that sort of – I think, I guess a lot of people do, but like, a friend of mine went to go see X-Men this weekend. He brought his teenage son, and he called me with 7 minutes to go before the movie started, and he said, "We're the only two people in here."
Really?
He said, "How can that be?" Like, they were in like the middle of nowhere, Virginia, but he's like, "I don't care. It's still opening weekend, and it was nice weather and all that stuff." But like, we were making excuses, you know, of like, this is still opening weekend, and the numbers were fine. But you know, how do you go to a theater? But I talked to him after it, and he was like, you know, 10 people probably filtered in, but it's. That was not the case when Return of the Jedi was coming out. It was huge. So,
yeah, you know, I agree. It's that's definitely one of them. And I'm curious to see if Star Wars does get back to Memorial Day weekend. I know it's a weekend that Disney loves. I think if it wasn't for Blended, I think Maleficent would have opened up this weekend, because Disney really loves Memorial Day weekend. The Pirates of the Caribbean franchise kind of that's the top. Pirates of the Caribbean at World's End is the top moneymaker on Memorial Day weekend of all time. It opened with $139 million. As we record this, we don't know what the weekend gross is for X-Men Days of Past, so I don't know if it's going to top that, but it may. But you know what? We'll have to see. I think that I think X-Men Days of Future Past is a good movie. I think Star Wars may get back there.
Right, right.
We will have to see. The first solo movie that Star Wars has announced is December 2016.
Okay.
So far they're not getting back there. to something.
Yeah, I guess we'll see. It just feels like nowadays with the theatrical windows being what they are. Yeah, I just think nowadays things can sort of open whenever. You know, the March movies, Divergent, Hunger Games, they've sort of proven that that's a viable weekend. Mm-hmm. If Guardians is a smash on August 1st or the way that the Bourne movie was in the beginning of August, I mean, you can kind of, if you bring the goods, you can kind of open almost whenever.
I agree. But Days of Future Past, certainly, I think it's one of the better ones that have premiered over Memorial Day weekend of the last couple of years, at least. And I really enjoyed it. And I'm really looking forward to Apocalypse. Be honest with you, I hope they give Bryan Singer Apocalypse. I really do. I hope he sticks with the franchise. I think he did a great job with Days of Future Past. I was a little worried about whether his aesthetic would carry over to a new, because I feel like since X2, things have really, people are expecting these kinds of movies to feel different, to look different. I think Singer has really evolved. I think this is his best movie, his best X-Men movie. I will go there. I think it was good. But Sean O'Connell, thank you very much for taking some time out on your Memorial Day weekend to chat with me about these movies. And
one of my favorite things to
do. It is one of your favorite. I know it's your favorite thing to do. But thank you very much for listening. I hope you enjoyed your holiday weekend, wherever you're listening, if the holiday weekend is behind you. And onward and upward, Sean. We have a lot coming up. We have a huge June. Did you see Edge of Tomorrow yet?
No, I'm supposed to see it, not even this coming week, but the week after.
Oh, I can't wait to talk to you about that movie. So far, that is my favorite summer movie. There's a little bit of a tease. We will talk about that when it comes up. But thank you very much, Sean, for joining me. Thank you very much, everyone, for listening. And enjoy your weekend at the movies.